can be a little tricky, especially if you're relatively new to the Dharma or to this Sangha or this style of teaching. But even sometimes people who have been around for a long time run into things in the teachings that are a little hard to assimilate, especially new things take us a while to get. So your opportunity is to keep in mind that if it doesn't make sense, don't worry about it. A seed is planted which might ripen later. And I tend to repeat myself a lot over the course of these talks, so you'll undoubtedly hear it again. If things don't seem right, ask questions to clarify what I was unskillfully trying to say. And if you take things home and work with them and it just doesn't seem to be a fit for you, don't worry about it. Pick up what fits and use it and set aside what doesn't, and maybe it will later. So my responsibility is to present things in as clear and accessible way as I can, and yours is to sort through it the way I just described and not worry if it's not making sense or if it turns out to not be a fit. Tonight we're going to continue talking about the path to wisdom. Actually, we've been talking about this path for quite a while. In fact, if my notes are accurate, we first started talking directly about emptiness in the spring of 2013. And it takes a while to get into this stuff. In Buddhism, and in fact, all wisdom paths throughout the world, in all the world's major religions, wisdom means knowing the truth of things, knowing how things really are, knowing what things really are, knowing what you are. In kind of a biblical sense of knowing, knowing experientially, intimately, even passionately, coming to know the truth of things. And so obviously it's a developmental path. And even within Buddhism, there are a number of different wisdom paths, or paths with different variations. And we're choosing to use one that developed around 900, the year 900, the decade, I mean, the century anyway, of the 900s. So over 1,000 years ago. And it's the path to wisdom that consists of three components: developing view, meditation, and action. Action is sometimes referred to as conduct. Same thing, view, meditation, and conduct. But I like action because it refers more directly to our daily activities. And last week we started talking about view. View is the view of emptiness, classically. We're learning it more as the view of boundlessness. And we develop into the view in the same way I just described developing into wisdom. First, we learn about it. And most people don't much like starting to learn about emptiness. Boundlessness is a little more user-friendly. But what we have learned so far, to recap, is that the view of emptiness means that the way things appear to our ordinary conditioned mind is not in accurate accord with how they actually are. And the word boundlessness helps us remember that how they actually are is boundless, far more than the way they appear. far vaster and deeper and more nuanced and more complex than the way they appear. So we first hear that, and then we hear examples from the teachings that date back now 2,500 years. And there are some beautiful modern examples, like what we've all read in Thich Nhat Hanh's book, The Heart of Understanding, where he takes a common piece of paper, and we all think we know what a piece of paper is, and he leads us poetically into seeing that paper is interdependent with the trees that made it, and the sun and rain and atmosphere and soil that nourished it, and the countless animals that contributed to the soil, and the logger and the log truck driver and the people who got it to the mill and all of their parents and spouses who supported them, and all of the people who brought it from the mill, and the air and the water that were used by the mill and recycled back to us, so we're already part of it, and so forth, to the point where you see that this thing that we call and know as a piece of paper represents the entire world, in fact, the entire universe. And we're taught that this is the truth of emptiness, boundlessness, that everything is mutually interdependent, interactive, interpenetrating, constantly changing, being changed by everything else. And until recently, we were taught this, and then we explored it, and we discovered that it was true. In more recent years, we have modern physics proving to us that it's true. How every particle of what we are and what's around us in this paper formed ultimately in the Great Bang and all of the events since then. In fact, thanks to Maria Popova, who writes Brain Pickings, some of you might be familiar with that, a weekly commentary that she can email to people. I learned of a NOVA, a PBS NOVA special that will be free viewing for about the next week. And it's called Black Hole Apocalypse. And it's the first PBS science special hosted by a woman. And it's beautiful. Some of you may have already seen it. And it is a 2-hour presentation of the view of emptiness. What we thought about time turns out to be vastly inadequate and inaccurate. Same with what we thought about space and light and distance and gravity. The way they appear to our ordinary senses is a mere inaccurate shadow of what they really are. And as we learn through physics what they really are, we see that they are interdependent with everything else in the universe and with us, interpenetrating, interchanging. And this is the view of emptiness. So there's a developmental path here. We learn about it, scratch our heads, don't get it at first, feel repelled by it, learn that the view of emptiness denies nothing. We aren't saying that this paper doesn't exist. Of course it exists, and it's used the way we use it, and nothing of that changes. It's just that we learn that we actually have the most intimate possible relationship with it that you could have. And the same is true for everything else in the universe. And this changes our view of things, So it's called the view of emptiness. And we cultivate that view. And eventually we start walking around seeing things this way. And that leads to a reduction in our self-clinging, which the Buddha pointed out in the Second Noble Truth is the root cause of all suffering. We start to see that the self itself is the same. What we thought of and think of in ordinary terms as the self is not at all what we think it is. And as we get these things, the entanglements of attachment and aversion and grasping and pushing away and ignorance start to weaken. And we start to wake up. So the first step, view, we cultivate it, we taste it, we try it on, we walk around looking at things as if they're a mirror image or a bubble on water or an echo or a mirage or a dream. We practice, we get into this, seeing that there's a boundlessness and an interconnectedness and an intimacy with everything. And we go deeper into the view of emptiness. And those of you who were here last month remember that we had a cover sheet on the handout, which was an intricate circle showing view, meditation, and conduct around the perimeter, and lines, beautifully curved lines, connecting all of these together. So this isn't a hierarchy. It's not a linear progression of view to meditation to action. These are three avenues of approach that we take simultaneously. So now we're going to talk a little bit about meditation in a slightly different way than we've talked about meditation before. And just like the view of emptiness, it's not denying anything about previous things we've talked about in terms of meditation. In Buddhism, you could say essentially that meditation can be divided into three or four ways of talking about it. One is concentration, where we learn to have our consciousness extremely well concentrated so it doesn't waver. Or mindfulness, which is much broader, where we learn to notice what arises and notice what we do with it. But we're going to be talking more tonight about awareness meditation, is how some people talk about it, learning how to rest in awareness itself. And this is the direction we'll be going for a while. And there are some other forms of meditation in Buddhism, but those are three very fundamental ones. So why don't you stand up and stretch for a minute? And what we're going to do is talk about meditation while meditating. And that's one of the things about meditation that we're going to be moving into, is that meditation doesn't need to be restricted to a prescribed form. It can become bigger. So after you've had a chance to stretch, why don't you sit back down and get comfortable? And we're going to meditate together. So you might call this a guided meditation. You might call this learning while meditating. You might call this a number of things. Teaching into the field of meditation. But let's sit in a relaxed way, and eyes can be open or closed, it doesn't matter. And I'll be talking to you about meditation, and your task will be to, as much as possible, be in a meditative state taking in what I'm saying as if we were going through each of these steps of meditation together. I may use the words I or you or us or we, and it all means the same thing. We're all of these words just mean that we're trying to experience what I'm describing together. At the beginning, I find that even when I've decided to meditate and go into the place of meditation and sit on my seat of meditation, that I still need to hit the pause button on the forward momentum of my thoughts, my activities. So it's a good idea when we sit down to consciously pause, to consciously stop that forward momentum so that we can begin the process of being here and now, the process of becoming present, which is vital to meditation. Also, here at the beginning of a meditation session, it makes sense to reflect on the extreme good fortune that we have to be able to meditate at all, much less to be able to meditate in a field of like-minded Sangha members whose own meditation is supporting ours and ours supporting theirs as we build a meditative field. So we realize that of the billions of people on Earth, just a tiny fraction have this privilege. And this privilege isn't something that we can totally claim for our own credit. Many of the factors that led to our being able to be here tonight preceded our own birth. The causes and conditions are vast and include having adequate food and water and shelter and peace and freedom and plenty and opportunity and safety that most people don't have. And we live in a place where we don't get punished for having certain beliefs or practices. And we live in a time when teachings are freely available in books and recordings, retreats. So it makes sense to pause for a minute and express gratitude for this extreme good fortune. And this expression of gratitude helps wear down our self-clinging. Less self-congratulations and more gratitude. And at the same time, it is natural, as we reflect on how rare this is, to have compassion for the people who don't ever have this opportunity, and to hope that if there are any benefits from our practice, perhaps they can ripple out and benefit others. And so this whole section can be really shortened to something like, I give thanks for this opportunity to practice and pray that all beings may benefit. And at this point, our meditation is to come more into the here and now. And we start this by settling. And it can be a good idea to start our process of settling by grounding into the earth, our mother, of which we're a fleeting and transient manifestation. So we start by noting all of the points of contact, which are the points of support for our body, all of the places where there's pressure and support. These are direct points of connection with the earth. And we move into sensing the field of gravity, the intimate embrace of gravity on every aspect of our body. We can feel it in the weight of our feet and legs and hips, and we can feel it in the weight of our torso, the weight of our shoulder and upper extremities, the weight of our head on our neck. We might even feel it in other parts of our body, Perhaps we feel the weight of our jaw or our tongue, even maybe the weight of some hair. We may be able to become sensitive enough to this intimate embrace of gravity to notice its effects on our organs, our cells, molecules, or atoms. The intimate embrace of Earth through the field of gravity on every single minute atom of our body. And at this point, we are fully in our body. And so we settle into the body even further by noticing not only the weight that we've been noticing, but the solidity of it. This is called by some people the earth element, and we're settling into the earth element. And we can feel the warmth of our body in our core, or in contrast to the cool air on our cheek. And we notice the fire element. And we might notice the moisture in our body, in our mouth, our eyes, our nose, also manifested by the movement of blood. We might be able to notice the beating of our heart and our chest. If we're really settled, we might notice the pulse of blood in our fingers, our toes, our cheeks, the water element. And naturally, as we become more and more settled into our body, we can't help but become aware of the breath. So slowly bring your attention to the breath itself, to the rising and falling of your chest, to the in and out movement of your breath. Try to bring all of your awareness and focus and attention to this in and out movement of the breath. Not controlling it or manipulating it, but drawing your attention into the breath. And now that we're focusing on the breath, we can move even deeper. All of our attention moving to the breath, all of our awareness. Consciousness seems fully identified with the breath, the in and out of the breath, the flowing in and the flowing out, the breathing in, flowing out, where our consciousness is totally identified with this movement of breath in and out. Next, we very gently move our consciousness to the out-breath alone, no longer on the in-breath. And we let our awareness ride the out-breath into a sense of spaciousness. Our whole consciousness now riding the out-breath into a sense of openness, vastness, and spaciousness. Our entire consciousness on this flowing out into openness and spaciousness. And finally, we release the out-breath and move our consciousness entirely into this sense of spaciousness. Move our attention into the sense of openness and vastness and spaciousness itself. Rest in the space-like nature of awareness. Vast and open, no center, no edge, no inner, no outer. No reference point, no focus. Just the vast space-like nature of awareness. We rest in the space-like nature of awareness. And at this point, although it feels like we've created the meditative field, we've actually, at this point, entered the meditative field, which is the space-like nature of awareness. And meditation here consists very simply of steps you all know very well. We notice when we're carried away and no longer resting in the space-like nature of awareness. We let go of whatever carried us away, and we return to resting in the space-like nature of awareness. With mindfulness, we notice being carried away, but we don't analyze. We just let go, and we return to the space-like nature of awareness. The simple letting go without analysis teaches us not to cling. The simple letting go trains us to avoid clinging or pushing away, just letting go of whatever took us away from awareness. And returning is returning home, returning to our true nature, the true nature of our mind, the space-like nature of awareness. So now we rest in this space-like nature of awareness with the simple instructions that we notice when we're carried away, we let go of what carried us away, and we return to resting in the space-like nature of awareness. Now you can gently open your eyes. And see if with your eyes open, maybe just partially open, maybe just looking down at the floor, maybe looking straight ahead. See what it feels like to continue this meditation. Resting in the space-like nature of awareness. Noticing when you're carried away from that, letting go of whatever carried you away, and returning to resting in the space-like nature of awareness. Now you can come back into a more ordinary consciousness in this room. As far as what to do with your eyes, there are advantages to both having your eyes closed and having them open. First of all, an apology to beginners or people who are relatively new to meditation. Traditionally, this kind of awareness meditation has been taught after people have thoroughly mastered concentration practice and then mindfulness practice. But there are reasons to not wait, one of which is time is short and life is uncertain. The other thing that gives me more confidence to teach this, even to beginners, is after reading some books that Valerie gave me on Centering Prayer by Cynthia Bourgeau, who has adopted these techniques, very similar to these, of what's called, I'm blanking the name now, objectless awareness. And she has found that beginners do just fine with this, despite the tradition in the Buddhist wisdom teachings of leaving this for later after you've mastered the other forms of meditation. This is not to replace mindfulness in any way. Mindfulness is where we start, because you can't even do concentration practice without mindfulness. And mindfulness carries through us through the entire wisdom path. If you're not mindful, you're not here and now. If you're not here and now, you're not being able to do the work. So this doesn't supplant mindfulness practice, but this moves us in an experiential way into not making mindfulness the only practice. We're moving into a bigger field. So going back to my discussion about what to do with your eyes, Cynthia Bourgeau in the Christian Centering Prayer, I think she all the time teaches people to have their eyes closed. Is that your understanding, Valerie? And in the Tibetan tradition of Dzogchen, people are taught to always have their minds open, their eyes open, for two reasons. One is that you're not screening anything out. Everything is part of the field of meditation. And the other thing is that it then is a much more easy flow of bringing your meditation into daily life. The problem with eyes open is that the mind goes out to all of the sense doors. The mind goes out through touch, and the mind goes out through hearing, and the mind especially goes out through the eyes. And visual objects really pull us out toward them, and then we reify and we think about and we narrow down on and we grasp or push away. So having one's eyes open is more challenging. But those advantages still persist. The meditative field as our natural state, the resting in awareness as our natural condition of mind, doesn't need to have the doorways closed. It's a matter of opening everything possible. And also, as I said, it makes it easier to bring this into daily life. So you might want to alternate. You might want to have periods of meditation where your eyes are closed and periods of meditation where you're sitting Zen-like with your eyes partially open, looking down at the floor some comfortable distance ahead of you. And then over time, if you're comfortable with your eyes open, you can gradually raise your eyes until you're staring straight ahead, as if your eyes are actually staring out into space, taking in everything. Another advantage of meditating with your eyes open is that it's a little easier to stay awake sometimes. Anyway, that's up to you how you use these things. I think this is a good time for questions. I think if I were in the audience right now, one question I would ask is this really all that different from what we've been doing? And the answer is yes and no. We're still using concentration practice to try to stay on target. And we're using mindfulness practice to know when we're off target. But we're starting to move more into the experience of what you might call the natural state, the true nature of things, by entering into the space-like quality, which is the actual experience of one of the five wisdom qualities, which is the space-like nature of awareness. So this is meditation where we're actually learning to rest in the space-like nature of awareness. And there are some advantages to that. It's an expansion of our consciousness, moving from the narrow confines of ordinary mind, which is all built around the existence of a separate self, a separate independent self, and its relationship to everything else that it perceives, which is a dualistic relationship, which leads to grasping and pushing away and ignorance and suffering, inevitably, as the Buddha has taught us. This awareness practice is moving us into one of the qualities of mind that's beyond that. And the more spacious our consciousness becomes, the less clinging to a separate self there is. But as you saw in the meditation practice that we did tonight together, this practice, maybe paradoxically it might seem at first, depends on being totally grounded in the body, the earth, the body, the breath. And we use the breath, once we're grounded in the earth and the body, we use the breath to move us, to ride the breath out into the space-like nature of awareness. It's a very handy avenue. Rod.
Yeah, I'll come up and say something. Down in the chair. You mind if I come back? I was really receptive to your teaching today. Not that I'm not normally, but so just to clarify. What I liked was, first off, it was a really good setup because when we've got into our initial meditation, it was absolutely
so I can no longer see you and read this at the same time. So let me know when you all have it. And turn to the last page.
We have it.
Okay. So it's Are we all on the page that says Song of Awakening?
Yes.
Okay, this was given to us by my teacher's teacher. And it was in a form of really broken Tibetan English, which would be hard to understand if you hadn't already heard him talking. So I'm going to read it because it contains all of the things I've talked about. You can follow along with me in reading, or if it works better for you to just close your eyes and listen, do what works best for you as a learning style. Oh, you fortunate ones, now is not the time to be asleep. From beginningless time, we have slept in ignorance. Enough of this. Now, with all your faculties of body, speech, and mind, begin the process of waking up. Throughout your days, perform virtuous activities. Then you will begin to recall the realities of suffering, birth, sickness, old age, and death. These forms of suffering are experienced by all beings, everywhere. Try not to forget this. Then you will see that we have no certainty of living even another full day. Practice diligently. Now is the time. Your only opportunity to practice is now. Your only opportunity to benefit yourself and others is now. Why waste it? Throughout your days, carefully contemplate the reality of impermanence. Then practice the Dharma with joyful diligence and accomplish the path. When death comes, you will be ready. You will not be afraid. Having no regrets at the time of death, this develops with our heartfelt practice. If you don't have this kind of confidence at the time of death, what has been your life's purpose? What have you taken refuge in during your lifetime? For the nature of everything we ordinarily take refuge in is empty and selfless, like the reflection of the moon on water, or bubbles on the water's surface, or dreams, or mirror images, or echoes, or mirages, illusions, or hallucinations. All inner and outer phenomena are illusory in this way. They are not actually as they appear to be. The nature of time is similar. All phenomena are this way. All samsara and nirvana, all things of heaven and earth, are this way. And the object of the spiritual path is to recognize this. Despite appearances, nothing simply comes, stays, and goes away. All things are constantly interacting with each other, constantly influencing each other, and constantly causing each other to change. There is actually not even the duality of a subject thinking about an object. The vast universe of thoughts and perceptions is not able to be characterized. It is beyond thought or description. These words reveal the kind of realization you need to achieve in this lifetime, because it is the doorway to wisdom and compassion. Those last words that I put in bold are actually his words verbatim. The doorway to wisdom and compassion, which is our reminder that you can't have wisdom without compassion. There are times in our development we feel like we have the wisdom piece, but we feel like we're not all that good with compassion. That just means we don't really have the wisdom piece fully down yet, because it's impossible to know, in a biblical sense, to know the truth of interdependence and interconnectedness and interrelatedness and interbeing. The intimacy of that brings us straight to compassion when we fully get it. So the first page of that handout, the first and the second pages are my trying to put together in a brief form what I planned to talk about tonight. I didn't talk tonight about the two truths, but it's in there on the first page. And then the the third page, I think, is the quotes, and that's pretty much verbatim, only slightly rearranged from 2 weeks ago. And then the fourth page, the Song of Awakening. And as with all handouts, some of you may find it helpful, some of you may not. Don't worry about it. It's there if you wish. So we have a couple of minutes for more questions if you have any. It's pretty amazing to me that the practitioners of old on the cushion came up with the truths of emptiness and boundlessness that now our astrophysicists are proving on the level of everything in the universe. I just think it's awesome. And we're lucky enough now to not have to do all the work ourselves. We can watch a 2-hour video from PBS Nova and have a lot of it accomplished. Next time, I can't remember when, in February, we will talk about how to bring this on the road, action. And I actually jumped ahead. In that second page, you'll see a summary of what we'll talk about in a month. And it's just fine to read ahead because meditation is simple. Rest in awareness. Notice when you've been carried away. Let go, come back. And the same is true with action. Very simple. The six paramitas covers it as far as guidelines for how to take it on the road. And even the first three paramitas cover it, because then there's some redundancy, because the fifth is meditation and the sixth is wisdom, and we're already doing that. Okay, pleasure to be with you again, and see you in a month.
Thank you.
Then we're probably going to spend more time in the March retreat, going more deeply into these wisdom practices, view, meditation, and action. So hope to see you there as well. Good night.
Thank you. Thank you.